Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and we're going to talk about libraries this hour. Roberta Stevens is our guest. Roberta has walked and worked in libraries for 37 years. She began as the coordinator of a school media resource center, was chair of media services for the National Technical Institute for the Deaf at the Rochester Institute of Technology. She directed technical operations for the Fairfax County Public Library System, and she has had a 26-year career at the Library of Congress, including program manager of the Library of Congress Bicentennial and project manager of the National Book Festival. She's currently special assistant to the associate librarian for library services. She is the immediate past president of the American Library Association's organization. She is the sixth person in the history to be elected to the presidency from the Library of Congress, and we are delighted to have her with us. There's been a lot going on with libraries in terms of their changing role in society, in terms of how we value them, how we visit them. Libraries play a huge role in the minds and certainly in the hearts of many of us who absolutely love libraries, but they've been facing budget cutbacks and hour cutbacks all over the country, so we will talk about that this hour of the show as well. And welcome your phone calls for Roberta. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hi, Roberta. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here with you today, Kathleen, and I love talking about libraries, so I look forward
Good.
To the discussion.
I would imagine that you love talking about them. Do you have memories? Tell me about your earliest memories of going to a library when you were young.
Well, my earliest memory of going to the library was going to the bookmobile, because where I lived, we did not have a library. The closest library was downtown in Pittsburgh, and it was the big Grand Carnegie Library.
Oh.
I lived in a suburb, and all we had was a bookmobile, but I treasured every week the opportunity to go there and to check out as many books as I could. It was an indelible memory, and I think it is for everyone who remembers visiting the libraries in their youth.
I think so, too. It just sparks so many things, doesn't it? Your curiosity. People there are helpful. They can give you suggestions of books, and if you have a particular area of interest, I know that libraries, for some of the people we've talked to, like Nancy Pearl, who's a regular guest, were a shelter for her because her childhood was not very happy, and so the librarians just kind of took her in and helped her grow.
Well, and they really open up the imagination for young people,
mm-hmm.
and that's why they are, in fact, so vital to their communities. It's an entree to learning, but it is an entree to creativity and to development. And today we know that libraries are pivotal in their communities because they provide so many other roles in addition to the opportunity to be entertained and to learn. People are coming into the libraries in increasing numbers. Our libraries are packed because people are using them to communicate on the internet. And they're using them, if they have a small business, often they're coming in taking advantage of the facilities for their work. And most importantly, people have been heavily using libraries for e-government purposes as we increasingly shift there, and to help them find jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a big, big role for libraries in this extraordinarily challenging economic time that we're in.
Yeah, but because it is an extraordinary economic challenging time, a lot of libraries around the country, and give me a sense of what's happening nationally, have cut their hours, have cut their staffs, have cut funding for libraries in pretty large ways.
There has certainly been an effect on libraries from what we have seen occur on a national level in our economy. And you hear often about libraries that have had 20, 30, or 40% reductions in their budget, which is really tragic because they are among the most heavily used of the services that a community has. And often what we're seeing is it is not that the libraries are less used. In fact, they're more used. They've got double-digit increases in their usage. So this is tough. But what we've been looking at is really a perfect storm of challenging situation, and this is a reason why libraries need to get out there and have their users voicing how important the library is in the daily lives of all these individuals in the communities who have been coming through those doors. Budgets are being cut. I often would ask during my year as presidency how many people had an increase in budget. You know, maybe a few hands might go up in a large audience. How many had a flat budget? You'd see more hands going up. And how many had had decreases? And you'd see a lot of hands going up. So this is a serious situation, and we know it. And it is an opportunity. We're using it as an opportunity to really reexamine all the services that we provide so that we can make sure that we are using our funding to respond to the needs today. But in addition, we need to be building the support for increasing the budgets, not for decreasing budgets, of such a vital, vital service.
What about the area where you grew up outside Pittsburgh? Do they have a library now?
Yes, they do. They got one right around the time that my father was transferred by the corporation he worked for. They finally built a new library just before we left. So yes, they do have a library now. But I would probably be accurate in saying that they're experiencing the kinds of really relooking at what they are as an institution, what they're doing, and how they're providing services in this digital era, just like everybody else. Whether you're a school library, an academic library, or a public library. And that's really why ALA, the American Library Association, is so important, because we provide the opportunity, the ways for people to communicate with each other in the profession and for our supporters to not only build the support for libraries, but also to make sure that we are up to date with the latest in technology.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, because certainly in the time that you've been a librarian, and that I've been alive, libraries have changed so enormously. When you talk about technology, just having to learn how to use all of that equipment and how people need to know how to do it to access jobs and books and everything, it's just a tremendous change.
Well, it's for the fleet of foot. There's no doubt about that. And our profession is one that has been changing very rapidly. And, of course, people in school getting their master's degree in library and information science are being prepared for this entirely new world that we're in. But for those who have been working in the library and have got their degree many years ago, it's absolutely essential that they take advantage of the such opportunities as the ones that we provide through the American Library Association to keep totally up to date, which you can do through online courses as well as through attending conferences and special training sessions that we offer. Yes, it is definitely a changing world for all of us, but it isn't just in the library profession. I mean, it is in the way that we live and the ways that we work today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking about the role of libraries in challenging economic times, too, and how it was woven into a conversation we had recently about how libraries are increasingly being used for entertainment purposes, right? To get videos, to get music, all of that. But why not get it at your library?
Well, exactly. And that was, I think, probably one of the reasons that we saw such a surge occur at the time that we began to experience the beginnings of the recession. And people looked at their library and said, hey, let me use this resource that we already have here. And, you know, they took advantage of their library. And probably it was, for some people who may not have been using the library as regularly, an opportunity to learn about all the new services that were being offered. I mean, clearly we have seen a major leap in e-books, electronic books. And, yes, people can buy them on Amazon, but libraries 2 years ago or so, maybe about a third of them were offering e-books. A year later, two-thirds of them were offering e-books to their users. Now, I'm not sure in the past 8 months or so how much it's increased, but you know it's exponentially grown as well. So we are responding to the changes in the technology, but not only in terms of the materials, which certainly is the case, but also with the skills that our staff have to not only to help people learn how to use the technology. That is one of the roles that we play within our local libraries.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about e-books for a moment. I I must tell you that I'm of an age where I will have a very difficult time transitioning to that. And because of the nature of the work that I do, I usually read the books when I'm doing the interviews, and I don't mark them with pen because how in the world can you mark a book with pen? It's pencil, so I can erase it, but I mark them up, and then I reread them, and I underline things, and it's a whole habit. It's like the pen that you want to use every day. You got to have a certain kind of pen that you use. And I cannot imagine, although everybody seems to be doing it, Roberta, reading a book on a computer. It's just beyond me.
Well, I think there's a convenience factor at work, and there's also the opportunity for people to change the font so that it, if they're having eyesight issues, it helps them to, enlarges the font for them. But I think primarily what we're seeing is convenience, and we're also, I see lots of old people, to tell you the truth. I may be categorized as an old person, but I see a lot of older people using e-books. It isn't just young people.
No, I know.
It's older people. And if you're traveling, as I was traveling through the year, actually as president-elect and particularly in my year as president, e-books are pervasive.
I know.
People are on the plane reading them and, traveling on trains, whatever. They are so very convenient for them. And they load a number of books on them and take them with them. It's a lot easier than carrying around a lot of print books. So
mm-hmm.
I think there's a major convenience issue. But for young people, they're digital natives. They're
yes.
used to working in these
yes.
ways. They're used to accessing these materials. As natural as it seemed to you to pick up a print book and to cherish that, for them, they their mode of operating is to get digital access. If you want, they're checking Google if they have a quick question. It's just the way they operate, and that's what we are adapting to provide. And also, libraries provide information that you can't easily get on Google, and so we have a big role in helping younger people to really build their critical thinking skills. And then we do that in libraries.
Right.
To really evaluate what it is that you're finding on the internet, which is not always, and frequently not reliable or correct information. We know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have a house full of books?
I have a library full of books in my home.
I got books everywhere. I mean, I can't even part with them. They're everywhere. They're on the stairs. They're filled in bookcases, and it's just hard. Maybe I'm worried that I'm going to forget something. And if the book is there, then somehow it's closer to my mind.
Easier to snatch that book out than to do searching.
Probably.
But again, there is a generational difference.
Yes, no doubt about that. Tell me about this all-important area of helping people find work at libraries with the unemployment rate so high. How have libraries responded to that, and how can they be of service?
Well, there are a variety of ways that we do that. One thing is that people may not be very comfortable with using computers, and so we provide training in how to use computers, how to access and do searching on the Internet, and also how to search particular databases of material for information about jobs, not only about job opportunities, but also about being able to research a firm or organization that you're applying for a job at. So that when you come in, you have a competitive edge.
Mm-hmm.
We do training in libraries on writing resumes. We help people. We work with the communities so that we can set up the training sessions with people who will give instruction on effective ways to do job interviews. And again, one of the key roles that is occurring in libraries now is helping people to get access to e-government services. Because more and more we're seeing a shift, as you know, out of the paper environment and paper applications to requiring individuals to apply online for the services of their state or locality, and particularly the federal government.
And we're going to welcome phone calls. We'll talk more about that whole area because it's fascinating. And databases, how do you access, how do you know what all the databases are, too? That it's just overwhelming how much information is there. Our guest this hour is Roberta Stevens. She is the immediate past president of the American Library Association. She has worked in libraries for 37 years, and she is now special assistant to the associate librarian for library services at the Library of Congress. Our number is 800-486 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. The importance of libraries, your memories of libraries, how you use libraries right now, if you've noticed any decline in the hours that your library is open, or maybe whether or not it's even open. The help that they can provide in terms of finding jobs, learning computers, etc. We would love to hear from you. Oh, great. All our lines are going. I love you. I just love this audience. Talk about libraries. Give the phone number. All the lines are going. That's just good. To you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now. Phil is our first caller. Hi, Phil.
Hi, this is Phil in Hebron. My phone is cutting in and out, so I'll try to get this in.
Okay.
I went to school at the University of Illinois, and as an undergrad, got to use their library, which I think is third in the nation behind where this young lady worked in, I think Harvard. But I'm very envious. I get access to the high-speed internet at my library. I don't have it at home. And I'm envious of any high school or college kid that has access to all that information. And I speak to the librarians almost daily, because I'm there about 3 or 4 hours a day, about how the internet's used. And before I could ask my questions, he said about 70% of our usage is Facebook. I find that terrifying considering what's on the internet. I'd like to hear some comments.
Am I answering, Kathleen?
Please, Roberta. Oh, yes.
Be happy to. Well, that is actually a way that libraries are used. I'm sort of surprised that the University of Illinois, 70% of their use is Facebook. But in fact, libraries have been used to connect individuals, and that is one way that individuals are being connected. What we try to do in libraries is, we don't prescribe how people use the facilities. However, we try to encourage and grow them beyond coming in and just doing simple searches on Google. I mean, that's really one of the missions of a librarian, is to develop the thinking skills of the users beyond just being able to acquire information through the basics. I don't have an easy answer to that. I don't know that 70% of their usage is Facebook, so I'm sorry, I can't really respond. But people are free to come in and use the internet as they please.
Yeah. Luann in Milwaukee. Hi. Hi,
are
Luann.
You there?
We are. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to mention, I got an iPad about a year ago, and I was, like you said, Kathleen, I don't know if I could ever switch or read a book online, but when I got the iPad, I read so much more because it's so much easier to download. And then I find out now that I have to go renew my library card, because now I can download some electronic books from the library, which is great. So it really did advance my reading. I just want to mention that.
Well, good, good. I'm glad to hear that. Roberta?
I think that really falls in the nature of the entire library profession, is that what we strive to do is to give you access to materials and information as easily as possible. And that is what is occurring with digital books. But it's not only digital books, it's all the services. When you think about being able to ask questions online and have them answered rather than having to go into a library, when you think about the opportunity to do searching of the catalog right from your home, all these aspects in this digital era are part of bringing the conveniences to you and to encourage your use of the library and to take advantage of what we have as resources.
And what about the number of books that you can download from the library? Are there lots and lots of them? How does that work, Roberta?
Well, it works in different ways at different places. In the case of academic libraries, many times they will buy the e-book, and they may mount it on their mainframe computers. So they have it in essence in perpetuity.
I see.
In public libraries, their function is different. They are not a research facility. And so they will buy, licenses for the most popular current materials in e-book format. And then as time passes, they may choose not to continue the license for that book and mm-hmm. instead move on to other books that are of particular interest to people. But it does bring to the fore one of the major issues that we are all dealing with, which is, if books are delivered in at some point in the future, strictly in a digital format, you know, what is, you know, people wonder, what is the future of the library, since it's been, our buildings have been so frequently tied to the physical manifestation of a book. And that is something that we're all grappling with. The transition's is a gradual one, but it is something that we all think about. And then what happens if the digital material, the information, the book, disappears and is taken off, is no longer accessible? These are issues as a nation, and really throughout the world, that we're thinking about, concerned about.
Yes, I would imagine so. What you just said makes me sad. How do you answer that question, the future of the library?
The future of the library, I think the future of the library is actually very secure as long as we continue to look at what we're doing and how we're providing services to users, and as long as we know we are in touch, keeping in close touch and assessing what our users need. Then we will always be here as an institution. People will always need information. And in our country, the success of our democracy has been built on an educated populace, and we play a key role in that.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, how do we deliver that information? How do we make sure that it is convenient, that it is easily usable for individuals? But we have a vital role if we as a country are going to be successful in the 21st century.
Thanks, Luann, so much for your call. Nick in Oshkosh. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to thank your guest for being on. I am a lifelong library user. I'm 30 years old, and I frequent our library in Oshkosh several times a week. Everyone there is so incredibly friendly, and I would just like to say that I agree with the future of libraries. It is very important to make sure that we don't close down our libraries like we see in other states. They're just pockets of information. And as long as everything's staying up to date and everyone that works there stays like they are, helping everyone and being friendly all over, I think we don't have to worry about that at all.
And Nick, why do you go to the library so often? What are you doing?
I go for books. I go for movies.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, and they're just great. I can't speak highly enough, especially of our one in Oshkosh. It's an older building, and it is just beautiful, and they've done a good job at keeping it up.
Well, Nick, I want to thank you, too, and I'm sure the librarians at the library in Oshkosh are going to be thrilled that they have such a vocal supporter.
I'm sure
for
they
them.
Are.
I want to lay a little experience from the year. I did a lot of traveling, and, you know, it is essential that we have lots of people like Nick who are out there talking about what our libraries mean in their lives. I was in China several times as president-elect and again as president, and they understand something that is, in fact, crucial. They are building these industrial areas, industrial parks. They're really beautiful, and what they have, the pillars in those parks of that whole area, is they have a big library. They see the libraries as absolutely essential to building creative and innovative people workers, and they have universities, branches of their universities, and they have the firms. They see this as the strength, how they can be competitive and strong in the future, and that's really a lesson to all of us. That's what we have to do, is have an educated populace that depends on, uses their libraries, that supports their educational institutions, and that they work in collaboration with the private sector.
Hmm. Well, I hadn't thought about libraries all around the world until you just mentioned going to China. I would imagine probably you've done more than a bit of traveling in this presidency job. Is it great variation from country to country, the existence of libraries and how well-stocked they are?
Well, there is a considerable variation from country to country. There's no question about that. The last place I went to visit was in Finland, and they use their libraries very heavily, and they had very advanced libraries. They were advanced not only in terms of what they offered as materials and services, but also in the facilities themselves. They embodied what we do now in building our libraries. We have lots of flexible and open spaces We're heavily wired. We have comfortable seating. There's lots of light, color. And they are very much, I think, in the mode of what you would see in this country in our newer facilities.
Mm-hmm.
I also traveled in Eastern Europe, and their road back to successful economies post-Soviet era, the era of domination by the Soviet Union, has been varying. And their libraries reflect that. As they, you know, their economies are still developing, where they've developed more quickly, for instance, in Slovakia, the libraries are coming along more quickly. I was in Bulgaria, and they clearly had more of a struggle economically, and you could see it in the libraries. They still followed a mode that we would characterize more of the 19th century, where there are lots and lots of individual rooms within a library, which means that you have collections that are split up, and you have to have a lot of staffing to cover them.
Mm-hmm.
That's very much at variance with what is occurring in our libraries here in the U.S. today.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as more advanced countries have been able to use, really, the U.S. The U.S. is a big model. American Library Association has 61,000 members. We're the biggest library association in the world, and we are truly the gold standard and leaders for really helping to ensure we have libraries that are up to date and people working in them that are up to date with the latest technologies and skills.
Well, you've given me a whole new way to think of America. Love America because we have the best libraries in the whole world. That's good.
And I think I work at the best library in the world, too, the Library of Congress, which is without peer internationally.
And tell me about the collections that you just have the best collection in the world, huh?
Well, and I'm actually assistant chief here, functioning as assistant chief in the Geography and Map Division, and this is the largest map collection in the entire world. And, of course, we are also actively engaged in geographic geospatial information systems. So this has been a library that was truly cutting edge and getting into the digital era by beginning years ago, back in the mid-90s, to digitize our collections and put them up on the World Wide Web so anybody in our country or outside of our country could access our collection.
My, and how do we do that? If we were going to do that after we say goodbye to you, we would...
Well, you can go right into the Library of Congress website, which is a simple one to remember, www.loc.gov, and you'll get access to the collections through the website.
Ooh.
And American Memory is a great source on the website for beginning to bring you into some of the extraordinary treasures that we have. We also have a World Digital Library site up on, connected through our site as well, which we have been pioneers in. The Library of Congress started with the National Digital Library Program, moved on to actually working with states throughout the country to digitize their materials, your unique and archival materials, and as part of a National Digital Information and Infrastructure Preservation Program. So we've really been advancing very quickly in the past probably 15, 16 years in the digital area and really been leaders.
We're going to welcome more phone calls, 800-486-8655. Roberta Stevens is our guest. She is the immediate past president of the American Library Association, and she is a special assistant to the Associate Librarian for Library Services at the Library of Congress. And we go next to Ann in Milwaukee. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Kathleen, and hello to your wonderful guest. I'm retired from teaching so that I have time now, and I work as a volunteer in what we call the book cellar in the Central Library.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and we're selling $1 a piece for hardcovers, 50 cents for softcovers, books, classics, traditional treasures. We're selling them by the Friends of the Library Association, but we need to make room for new acquisitions. And I'm wondering what's going to happen when education changes and the accessibility to these books that haven't been circulating they're no longer accessible. What will the digital world do to kind of keep us in contact with our heritage? Also, on the street, Wisconsin Avenue, people come in from the street to get warm in winter and cold in summer,
mm-hmm.
and they have a cup of coffee. There's a little coffee thing, and they sit and they read. People who have very little means, very little material good, they read. They meet each other. It's a beautiful experience, but it's a big sacrifice when you think what's happening.
Well, there's a couple points that you're making, Anne. And one thing is that, just what you pointed out, people are coming in to use a facility. They find it comfortable. And that's really been one of the big pushes in how a library is used, is to make it a warm, open, and welcoming environment. And that's what I was referring to when I was talking about the changes that are occurring in the physical structures. And as we renovate our libraries in this nation, and frankly, at this point, we're renovating a lot of the libraries that were built when I was younger. But we are renovating them so that they are that kind of environment for people. Just as I was saying, comfortable, light, color, easy communications abilities. But in terms of being able to keep us in contact with our heritage, we can still do that. I mean, there's a plethora of online opportunities to be made aware of your heritage. There are really, in fact, unparalleled opportunities as we digitize newspaper collections, for example. And then sometimes in very, you know, local areas are taking the responsibility of digitizing their back issues. So you can go in there and you can do research on your family or relatives. These are wonderful things. But what's needed is to have a guide to help you to get to that information. And that is why libraries and skilled librarians are so important. That the heritage won't be lost. What may be lost is the help. If we don't support our libraries and give them enough funding to hire people, what would be lost is the ability for people to access that information and to access the heritage.
Mm-hmm. And what about, thank you so much, Anne, for your call, and I hope a lot of people visit that. I've been to that bookstore many times. I love the idea of people coming in from the cold or from the heat to have a little cup of coffee and talk to each other and read. What a way to spend the day, right? And people who don't have very much, it's a great social thing. Thank you, Anne, so much. That's the Central Library, which is a beautiful library here in downtown Milwaukee. I wanted to ask you more about those databases and how we learn about what exists and how to access all of those, because it's information we should all have, Roberta. Do we learn that at the library, or how do you learn all of that?
Well, you don't have to learn it all, because if you have an information navigator in your library, they're going to help you to get the access to it, and then you will pick up and learn as you as you're working with a librarian. But I want to go back to what I think is actually really important, and it's school libraries, because where the learning should begin on the use of these electronic databases, electronic information that's available on the web, and being able to determine what's good, useful, valid,
right,
reliable, and what is not,
mm-hmm.
is through your school library. And we have a bit of a crisis in this country as school systems have had to look at their budgets. You know, sometimes they're saying, well, we don't need to have the school library open as much, or we may not need to have a certified school librarian in the school library. You do. You absolutely do. That is how you're going to learn how to access the databases and how to think about what it is that you're finding and how to make those judgments, which, frankly, as adults, are going to be critical to how we perform in the workplace. If you are an adult, you can go into your local public library, and they will show you how to access the variety of databases which used to be available to us in print indices. Now they're online. It makes it easier. It makes it faster. And it releases space so that we can use the room and libraries for other purposes, including having our users work collaboratively together, and that happens a lot. So in the academic libraries, we train students. Librarians train students so that when they come in, they know how to get this information so that they'll be successful in their time in school.
Thank you for your call. We go to Mary in Grafton. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I was just listening as you talked about school libraries, and that's what I was calling about, because in this time of budget cuts, it seems the school libraries are first on the chopping block. People seem to think you can have an aid of some sort there, just scanning the books at the checkout desk, and
right.
all that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And no one speaks about building a collection or teaching the skills, and that's as far down as the elementary schools. That needs to begin there.
Right, and what school libraries do, what school librarians do, is they're partnering with the teachers. What better way to instruct students than to have them partnering on the curriculum, on the lessons, and showing, using this opportunity to have students learn what materials to use as they're exploring a particular subject. And it gives them, students who come from schools that have good school libraries do better. We know that. They do better. And they certainly are more successful when they get to college. And if you're successful in a higher education environment, you're going to stand a better chance of being successful in the work environment. It's all intertwined. And that is why I was just struck by how China got it. China understood. They understood that that you were linking their private sector as well as their higher education institutions, their schools, and their libraries, that this was, in fact, a cyclical situation.
Thank you, Mary, so much for the call. Leland in Viroqua, hi.
Hi. I'm so glad to hear any talk at all about books, but especially from a reader of Kathleen and from a librarian. I'm a former English high school English teacher. I say former only because I haven't been able to find employment for the last 13 years in that field. My general feeling is that literacy is not only out of vogue, but it's very unpopular. So I come at this from the standpoint of someone who grew up loving books and loving libraries. I guess my main question is, over the last few years, I'd say the last 7 or 8 in particular, but 10 or more, I've noticed in city libraries, I've visited West Coast, Denver, Colorado, East Coast, with the exception of the Library of Congress, I've noticed that they've stopped being repositories of books. And they've become what I understand to be lending libraries. In other words, I have requested books from well-known authors from maybe even as recently as the 60s and the 50s and the 40s. I consider that recent because I read back to ancient Greece and the Vedas. But I have asked for books that I normally would have found in a major size library, and I've been told that they no longer are on the shelves. They've been sold.
Oh.
And I have to look through a national system of, which most city libraries are connected with that allow you to look for these older books. I'm just wondering if that's a policy of the ALA or if that's something that's taught in library science now.
It's not a policy of ALA. I think, in a general sense, when I was in library school, which I admit was a little while ago. What I think you're seeing occurring is this, Leland. There's a limited amount of space. There's not necessarily money to continue to add on to buildings or even, in fact, the room to do it. And certainly buildings involve maintenance costs, et cetera. So they look very carefully, and libraries do. And what they do have, and it may not always be popular, but what they have, which they didn't for many years, and probably not really until the 80s, is they're able to track usage through automated systems. And the automated systems, they came about in the 70s, but they really became much more sophisticated in the 80s. And so libraries are able to see what materials, in fact, are being used. And if they have to conserve on space, they will probably release the items that have not been getting much use or any use so that they have room to get in materials that are being used. And so particularly in public libraries, their role is not to be a repository. Their role is, in fact, to have the materials that are being used by their community.
Well, unfortunately,
however, we've got a backup.
You'll go into a Carnegie library that, formerly was a wonderful place to find wonderful reading material of all kinds, and you'll find 60% of the fiction is romance novels and what was called mass line when I was working in bookstores in my 20s. And this is not literature per se. These are books that readers can eat like a snack, if you know what I mean, instead of a book that's a meal.
Well, I'm a little surprised. I go to our Fairfax County Public Library, and it seems to me to be quite a mix. And that is what libraries, public libraries, strive to do, to have a mix that meets the needs of and the as being used by their population. But there is access to some of the materials that are much lesser used. And you can, you know, certainly there's a major online interlibrary loan capability. And we ourselves, we are the Library of Last Resort here at the Library of Congress. So we have, in fact, an archiving function. And libraries throughout the country actually are linked up. And they may keep materials in a particular subject area, and then another library will keep, you know, archive back in another subject area, so that we recognize physical limitations that an institution may have, and yet still make sure that we have those materials available for people.
Leland, thanks very much for the call. We're talking about libraries this hour of the show. Roberta Stevens, Special Assistant to the Associate Librarian for Library Services at the Library of Congress and immediate past president of the American Library Association, is our guest. More phone calls momentarily. One line is open, 800-486-8655 is the number. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've had more than a few emails come in, Roberta, so let me give you at least one or two from Jesse in Mineral Point. I'm currently enrolled at the School of Library and Information Studies in Madison, was also recently hired as the director of a small public library in southwest Wisconsin. I think it's important to remember public libraries depend on support from their communities. It's very much a use-it-or-lose-it service. Many people love the concept of libraries, but there's often a disconnect between the concept and regular use of services. So even if you can afford to purchase your own reading materials, movies, don't forget to utilize the library on a regular basis to show your support.
Well, I would agree with Jesse. That's absolutely key. People do look at not only how much use you're getting, but how you're being used.
Right.
And so that's, Jesse, thank you for saying that. Thank you for reminding people that we are there as a resource. And one of our challenges as librarians is to make sure people know what we have available to them in the library. And as I've been saying throughout this interview, ensuring that we are keeping up to date with the latest developments in technology and the way that people want to get information.
Amy in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling in because, you know, I understand this need to keep up with technology and in the libraries, but it seems to me that there's not a critical voice to the possible downsides of it. And I'm especially thinking about young children. The Association of Pediatrics recommends that children under two have no screen time. And yet one of our favorite libraries here in Madison, they've put up large screen TVs in the children's area. And I just find it very distracting to the kids who are there. And then there's also several computer areas, also in the children's area. And I'm just wondering, you know, where the input comes to spend money and resources, especially for young children who may or may not benefit from having so much technology in their library. So I'm just wondering if your caller or if Roberta can comment on that.
The use of technology is ubiquitous, as you see, and it is occurring, whether we may all feel as comfortable with it as the kids do, but it is occurring. And so I think that the question really is it being used wisely in that case? And also, I think you come to a much more critical question, which is, you know, how do we work with our young people to ensure that they are responsibly using technology in the internet. We are constantly hearing stories about, you know, kids who have, you know, there are dangers in communication, and that in some communication, you know, there's always some story in the press or on TV about, you know, young people taking photos of themselves,
right,
you know, partially naked,
right,
and then next thing you know, it makes the rounds to everybody, and there are dangers, and that's actually one of the roles that we play in as librarians is, and the American Library Association is, helping to instruct parents and instruct kids on the responsible use of the internet,
mm-hmm,
and what the impact could be of what you are putting out, photos of yourself or what you are saying. And these things, this trail is a long trail if you do not use it responsibly. It can affect you for years to come socially, and it's up there. A lot of times once it's there and it goes viral, you can't get it back. So that's a big role that we try to play. The American Association of School Librarians is very, very concerned about that, but also the American Library Association's Washington office has put out information for parents to help them instruct and work with their kids on using the internet so that they don't run into, they don't have these kinds of experiences that can in some ways mar you for a lifetime.
Exactly, yeah.
And you know, when you put messages out on the internet, I can tell you for a fact, when now employers are looking at your trail on the internet, so it can affect your job prospects as well. You
mm-hmm.
So you've got to think carefully about mm-hmm. what you're doing. And that's one of the roles we try to play, or work to play, for certain.
Good advice for all of our lives, all aspects. Think carefully about what you're doing. Amy, thank you very much for the call. We go to Susan in Portage County. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. Very interested in, from several directions, wondering if the Library of Congress makes money when a book passes on to Amazon. We have an ancestor who published a book in 1923. She was born in 1840. And just recently, that book was republished because of the Library of Congress's decision. I'm curious about who makes the decision, how does Amazon get it, and when does copyright run out? This was copyrighted.
Okay, well, I'm not sure about the particular instance that you're talking about. Anything that is out of copyright is clearly in the public realm, and other people can publish it. But we are not making any money from Amazon, okay? Just be clear about that. So we work very hard to raise money here to be able to do things that we can't do under the, you know, with the money that's appropriated. Most of that, you know, our money that's appropriated is going to the maintenance of our operations. But if we want to do special programs, we raise money for exhibits, et cetera. But we don't have an arrangement with Amazon.
Yeah. Here's an email that's come in from Luann in Green Bay. The state of Wisconsin has a consortium which organized to purchase e-books for its members. Next year we'll be spending $1 million for this. It sounds like a lot, but the books will be available to all library patrons of the member libraries, so there may be a way. Check it out through the local public library's website called Overdrive. She's a library. We have a lot of librarians listening today. This is great. At the Brown County Library in Green Bay, home of the 9-0 Green Bay Packers, she writes, where we also offer our patrons DRM free music through Freegal, 3 songs per week.
Susan, congratulations for getting that ad out there.
Yeah, right.
We need that's what we need to do, is take advantage of any opportunity to get the word out about these wonderful opportunities.
Exactly. All these services. You need a PR agent or something. Remember when we used to have PSAs on radio and television stations and all that happens at your library?
And now we're doing PSAs actually through, you know, in essence, Facebook. through the internet, World Wide Web. We're getting the information out through Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Here at the Library of Congress use a variety of social media to let people know about what it is that's new or service that we're offering, or you know, some up-to-date information on an exhibit, whatever it may be, a concert, lecture. It feels fragmented, but it's just the many, many ways in which we communicate today.
Right.
And that's what libraries need to
be doing. In other words, you're hip, right?
Well, I guess I am.
I guess you are, Roberta.
I guess we are.
I guess so. Well, I'd love to take another call, but we just can't. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. I really enjoyed the hour.
Well, I enjoyed it, too, and I will be doing a presentation on December 6th here at 4 o'clock at the Library of Congress. So if you happen to be in the Washington area, please come. It will be over in our stunning Thomas Jefferson building, and it will be on my year as president.
Oh!
Lots of photographs and lots of wonderful stories to tell people.
Oh, nice, Roberta. Thank you. Thanks for being with us. Roberta Stevens, she is the immediate past president of the American Library Association, special assistant to the Associate Librarian for Library Services at the Library of Congress. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease, whose mother is a librarian. Rhonda's a librarian. We love librarians here. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be with you tomorrow. Great conversations ahead.
Support for W.